It says in Genesis chapter 1, verse 28, that Adam was created, the mankind was created to subdue creation and rule over it. Then in Genesis 2, verse 15, after this is before the fall, so it's still the perfect world, that God created a garden and he placed mankind in it. And he said, work it and take care of it. And the reality is that each one of us as human beings has been designed to rule, to make decisions in situations. You are designed to make decisions, to lead in certain areas, to lead at work, to lead in the family, to lead in friendship groups. You're designed to rule, to make leadership calls sometimes, not in every area, but sometimes, but to make decisions and to work in order to take care of the world in general and the people within the world. We are called to work, to rule, and to take care of the world. You could say that we are designed to serve. Because that's what we are. We're designed to serve. We're designed to serve. God created us so that we could, as it were, serve the world to make it an amazing place. That's part of our creation mandate, along with other things. The Apostle Peter says in 1 Peter 4, verse 10, he says, God has gifted us, and we need to use our gifts to help or serve other people. Matthew 22, verse 39, Jesus says that we're called to love people as we love ourselves. And how do you love people apart from serving them, right? Yeah. Making their life better. Surely that's what love is. Love without action, without doing something about it isn't real love at all. It's just a saying. It's just a feeling. It's not worth anything. True love causes action, causes us to do something. So we're called to serve it. And we're going to spend a lot of this year, I suggest, serving each other, right? Yeah. Yeah. Or serving families or serving our employees. We're going to be serving people. And I want to talk into that. How do we make an awesome job of serving people this year? How do you? This is your first time in church. You know, this is going to be useful for you whether or not you know God yet. Because actually, as we're all serving somebody, serving our family, serving. So this is going to be useful for everybody. And at the end, if you don't know Jesus, we're kind of hoping that you'll have met Jesus here. Then I presume it'll be Jack who's going to jump back up. And he's going to say, hey, if you want to follow Jesus, then this is your chance. How do we serve well in 2018? Well, I've got a couple of opening points, which I call kind of the basics. All right, so if you've got your notes, you need to write this down. The first two are kind of the 101 class of serving well in the next season. And I have a scribe because I have a whiteboard. And I've been told many times that my writing is awful. So Iona's going to come up and scribe for me. And hopefully this is going to go really well. Just to warn you, I have changed my diagram slightly, so I will jump in occasionally to just alter your beautiful diagram, because I'm so well organized. And I always pray in the service, God, if you want anything changing, now's a good time, because in about half an hour, it'll be too late. So words along to that effect. So what I say is the first thing we need to do is figure out who are the others we're supposed to be serving. Right, that's a good question. Who am I supposed to be serving? The world's a jolly big place. I can't do everything. So who should I be serving first? Who are the others? And I want to suggest that the first thing that we should think about when we serve is, well, if you love Jesus, you love God, you'd be thinking, I'm going to serve God first. That's going to be the first thing I think. Whatever else is going on in my life, I'm going to serve God first. I'm going to serve his kingdom. I'm going to serve his purposes, his mission. I'm going to serve his family. I'm going to serve God first, right? In fact, it would be true to say that if you're a Christian, everything you do and everything I'm going to mention comes in the same category. All of it should be serving God, okay? So for Michelle and I, we don't separate life out in the serving God thing. Everything serves God. We serve God, our family serves God, what we do, everything serves God. But the first thing is of serving God. And I think it's really important that if you're a brand new Christian or you've never really been to church before, that you understand the first thing the Bible calls us to do is serve God. Okay, I've got time to go through it because I've got some things to say, but just take my word for it. And that kind of, I'm going to ruin your diagram here, that covers everything. The pen's not very good, is it? So it kind of covers it. Now, the second thing I suggest, but within the serving God, his vision, purpose, and kingdom family, is that we serve our family and friends. I think there's a calling, the Bible calls us to look after those that he's placed in under our remit. Under serving God, but That's important. And we should not abandon our family and our friends. And the Bible has some very harsh words to say that those abandon their children and wives and husbands. And again, if that kind of upsets you, I'm really sorry, but we'd love to help you through that. So at the end, Michelle and I and the team will be here at the front, and we'd love to chat and pray. So if you find any of this difficult or you're cross at anything or upset, do please come. We'd love to talk and pray with you. But the second thing is we serve family and friends, you see. And in one sense, that's part of this. Can you see this line? This line is not very strong. We're going to use it. I'll get a new pen. That kind of forms a second group. Does that make sense? The third thing, you should serve your employer, who you work for. You should serve them. The Bible says lots of things about making sure that we serve those that pay us well, that we work hard. We honor them because they're honoring us with, well, cash, basically. And we should honor them and we should serve our employer. Or if you're at college or at school, bad news, students, you don't get off, you should serve your lecturers and do as you're told and get your work done and things like that. You should serve them. That's what the Bible teaches. You should serve those in authority over you. And I know you don't necessarily like your lecturers and your teachers and stuff, but they're there to help you do amazingly well. And if you will follow their... When I was at uni, my very first lecture that we had, my professor, Professor Dixon, stood up in front of a brand new class of 50 students and said, look, he said, you're agrics. I know what agrics are like. Because agrics had a reputation at Newcastle University. Not particularly good. We did some fun things between us all. Somebody once smuggled a cow to the top of a block of flats and let it go in the top corridor. How cool is that? Anyway, so we had a bit of a reputation. And he said, look, if you will just turn up to every lecture, if you listen to what the lecturers say and do what they ask you to do, you will get a 2-1. You will get an upper second class degree, guaranteed. And it's the same with you guys. If you'll just follow what your lecturers say, your teachers say, you'll be amazing how well you do. That's it. It's really simple. Anyway, we need to serve our employer. The fourth thing I want to say is this, you then serve everybody else. Whoops. Everybody else. Oh, we have a pen. Look at that. Can you redo those lines? And that kind of gives you a picture of the others that we're supposed to serve. Serving God encompasses everything, and then serving our family and our friends, that encompasses everything underneath that, and then serving an employee kind of encompasses everything else, and then everybody else is in the bottom thing. And I want to suggest if you do this, a couple of things will happen. The first one is if you serve God first, his love, his power, his authority, his joy, his energy, his gifting will flow down through the other things. It will help you in every. If you want to be a great parent or a great friend, serve Jesus first, not second, first. And he will help you be an amazing parent or amazing. If you want to be a great employer, serve Jesus first, then serve your family well. That will set you up for a real win with your employer. Because you'll have a happy God who's helping you and a happy family who's not causing you issues. And this is what the Bible teaches. If you do these things in the right order, then actually your service becomes easier. So it's going to be easy, but it'll be easier than it would have been otherwise. This is kind of, for me, the 101 class of serving. The 101 class of serving. But more than that, if you have this kind of idea, actually what begins to happen is each block helps the one above it. So if you serve everybody else in the right place and serve your employee, these then help you serve the family and friends. Because if you serve your employee well, guess what? You get promotions. You get advancements, you get more money, you get more holidays, and so that you can serve your family better because you're better equipped to do it. Yeah, and actually the Christian world is full of stories of people who've done this and something's happened at work because of their love for God and their attitude and all those kind of things. And it happens, and so each one will add and cause you to do the one above it even better. Does that make sense? Right, I know you can sit down. I think that will... Oh, no, I have one other thing. The other thing on the other side, yeah. One other comment on this kind of one-on-one class. Make sure you stay healthy in the mix. Rest, balance, it's all good. Remember, even Jesus took time out on his own to pray. Remember that. So that as you serve, remember to stay healthy. And we've done lots and lots of preaching and teaching on remaining healthy. There's a whole archive of messages that if you're interested, you can go back and look. I'm not going to talk about it tonight. Does that make sense? So this is how you figure out how you're going to serve, the people you're going to serve, the others that we need, that you're going to serve this year. Is that good? Right, good. Number two. Remember, this is basic number two, is this. If we're going to serve well, we need to serve as part of a team, not on our own. Part of a team, not on our own. Either an official team or an unofficial team, but definitely part of a team. 1 Corinthians 12, the Apostle Paul writes about the fact that the church is like a body. It's not a body, it's people, but it's like a body. And he kind of, using the illustration of the body, talks about all sorts of things about how we should work together. Now, I've met a number of Christians over the years who go, yeah, I'm a Christian, but I don't need the church. I don't need all the other Christians in my life. That is wrong. The Bible says that is wrong. If you're a Christian, you are part of church. And if you're going to function well, you need church as well. And actually, church needs you. Because Paul says in 1 Corinthians 12 a few things. He says that all the gifts that are given you for the good of everybody else as well. They're not just supposed to be for you. They're supposed to be for everybody. In verse 7. He also says that that all of us, though many of us, are all part of the one body. And that we all belong in it, whether we like it or not. Verse 14 and 15. And the only question is, are you a good member of the body or a bad one? That's it. Yeah. Are you a good member of the body or a bad one? Quiet. But it's worth asking, right? Because if you're a bad member, you're making my life hard work. If I'm a bad member, I'm making your life hard work. So actually, if we can all get a little bit better, then we'll all get a little bit better automatically. Isn't that cool?
Yeah, I agree.
If we can all work a little bit better together, then we'll all naturally have a better year. Isn't that cool? So don't stuff it up. Is that right? Remember, I'm the senior pastor. Why do people keep calling me senior pastor? I need to be called something else rather than senior. Old. Thanks, Tim. Do you know that Christmas card I sent you for Christmas? It's not coming anymore. Anyway, we all belong. Paul also says that we're all important and unique. We're all important. You're important and unique. And verse 18 says that it's God who's arranged us the way we are. God's arranged you in your important uniqueness to play the role that God has got for you. You see, Christians need the church as much as the church needs the Christians. If you want to be healthy, can I suggest with all my heart that you serve in life as a team, within church life and outside church life. And for all those listening to this message who call Valley home, you don't need to be alone, any of you, ever. You really don't. You can choose to be, and we won't necessarily barge in, though we might do a bit, but not necessarily much. But you don't need to be on your own. There are people here that love you and will do the journey with you. You might have to go to some connect groups. You might have to put yourself, sure, absolutely, be part of the body and belong to it. But you don't need to be on your own. None of you need to be on your own. If you feel on your own, it's because you're choosing to be on your own. If you would just join and be part of us, we will love you to the end of time. We really will. We'll do our best. We're not perfect, okay? So don't expect perfection. We're, you know, flawed human beings. But we will do our best to love you to the very end. We really will. And there are some fantastic people here that will do the utmost best to make that happen for you. But we need to be part of it. If you're going to serve well this year, be part of team. Right, so they're the 101 kind of basics of serving. And what I really want to do is talk about point number three. Is that okay?
Yeah.
Oh, I'm having so much fun today. It's so much fun. And here's something I think that God's been trying to speak to me over the last year or so. And so I share it with that thought in mind. Because you see, in Galatians, somewhere else, it says that perfect love drives out fear. It's in 1 John somewhere, right? And I always presume that meant there should become a point in my life where I wasn't scared about doing anything. Yeah? Because perfect love drives out fear. So I should be able to jump up on the stage, because you don't know, but I get nervous every single Saturday when I'm preaching. Obviously, every single Saturday, I'm still nervous. And I'm kind of going like, surely I should be past it at my age, right? Because I do a lot of it, but I'm still nervous. I'm still a bit edgy. And it's like, but perfect love drives out fear. So I'm kind of waiting. But God's trying to teach me. He's trying to say, look, perfect love drives out fear, but you'll still get scared. You'll still get nervous about doing things and new things. And there's a reason for that. You see, if we're going to serve, we have to have two things in balance. Serve well, we have two things in balance in our life. And I'm going to share these two things with you. You need to be fearful and faithful at the same time. Fearful and faithful at the same time. I was taught, I think accidentally, that there would come a point where I'm so full of faith that my fear would disappear. But actually, the Bible doesn't say that. Honestly, it doesn't say that. It says both should happen in your life. I mean, in the right proportions. Not so fearful you can't do anything. That's not so. But there should be some fear. Proverbs 1, verse 7 says, as some of you will know, the beginning of wisdom is the fear of God. So if we're going to be wise, we have to be fearful in a sense of a holy, reverend awe of a God who with a click of a finger could just remove the entire universe. Who is so powerful, we can't comprehend it. Who knows everything. Who understands everything. Who sees our every move. Who understands, not only hears, but understands every thought of our hearts. Yeah. That's a bit fearful and scary, right? Yeah. Well, you should be. And the Bible says that's the beginning of wisdom. Right. Actually, understanding that in our lives. Paul writes in Philippians 2, verse 12. He says that we should work our life out with fear and trembling. Yeah. Well, I thought perfect love drove out fear. But Paul also writes that we should work our life out with fear and trembling. Because God is awesome. God is mighty. God is incredible. In one sense, awfully incredible. There's a passage in Revelation, which every time I read it, I'm reminded of, even when I meet Jesus face to face in the perfect world of heaven, there'll be some awe and fear left in my life. It won't disappear because I am human and he is God. In Revelation chapter 1, the Apostle John, who the Bible hints at was possibly Jesus' closest disciple, the one who, if anybody called Jesus friend, he did, right? Yeah. And this guy had a revelation, a dream on the Isle of Patmos. And this is a dream, he said. I want to start reading Revelation chapter 1. So this is somebody who knew Jesus really well when he was alive. They kind of did life with him. They kind of rubbed shoulders. He was his confidant. He was that guy, his closest friend who knew Jesus. It says this, Revelation 1, verse 12. John turned round to see the voice that was speaking to him. And when I turned, it writes, I saw seven golden lampstands. And among the lampstands was somebody like the Son of Man. Somebody like my friend Jesus. That's what he's saying. Like my friend Jesus. Dressed in a robe reaching down to his feet with a golden sash around his chest. His head and hair were white like wool, as white as snow. And his eyes were like blazing fire. His feet were like bronze glowing in a furnace. And his voice was like the sound of rushing waters. In his right hand he held seven stars. And out of his mouth came a sharp double-edged sword. His face was like the sun shining in all its brilliance. And then John writes this, when I saw him, I fell at his feet, though dead. He was full of awe and fear that caused him just to worship instantly and fall down as if he was dead. With his face to the floor, such was the impact that Jesus, the risen Lord Jesus, the risen restored God Jesus had over. And I said, then it says, then Jesus placed his right hand on him. Then he placed his right hand and said, do not be afraid. I am the first and last. I am the living one. I was dead, and behold, I am alive forevermore, and I hold the keys of death and Hades. And then he goes on and raises John back up, and then John has a conversation with him. You see, fear should be part of our life. In the right perspective, fear as in awe, as in a reverence, as in he's not just my friend, he's the king of the universe. There should be something in our life. And there should be fear as we serve him and doing a good job. In doing a good job. It's one of my biggest fears. Am I doing a good job? As pastor, am I doing a good job? And as you serve Jesus, as you know, in whatever role you take in kind of church sense, or in your work, or as a parent, are you doing a good job? Are you literally doing a good job for Jesus? If you're a policeman, are you being a good policeman? If you're a teacher, being a good, have you been a financial advisor? Is he honoring God in his? I know it crosses Jason's mind. Is he honoring God in his work? Is he working for God's purpose, vision, kingdom, and family, while he's serving his employer? And there should be that sense of, I hope I am. And that should make you a bit nervous. I say to some of the speakers here, if you're not a bit nervous before you're speaking on Sunday, I'm really worried about you. Because you should be. Because you're serving Jesus. And there should be that just edge, that little edge somewhere on you that goes, I hope I do a good job because I'm serving Jesus and this is important. Because it is important. It's not maybe, it is important. And there should be a little edge on your life every time you serve Jesus. In all areas of life, not just in church life. There should be a little edge, am I serving Jesus well? There should be just a little edge of nervousness, a little fear, I hope I don't fail. If I had time, I could talk about the parable of the talents. You remember the king went away? Jesus tells his story in Matthew chapter 25. He tells his story of a king who goes away and he gives one guy five talents, five pots of money, one, two pots of money, and one pot of money. And when he comes back, the one with five gives him five more and he says, well done, good job. Second one comes back, got two, gives his two and two more. And the king goes, good job, well done, served well. The one with one and says, look, I know you're a hard master and you know, you harvest where you don't sow, blah, 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 blah. So I hid my talent. And there's your one talent back, safe and sound. And the king goes, you're not awesome. In fact, you're the opposite of awesome. You've done a bad job. And Jesus says that the king was so cross, he chucked him out and gave his money to somebody else. And we're responsible for doing a good job. And we need to recognize that, because that fear will cause one thing. It will cause us to run back to God with all our heart and say, God, I need your help if I'm going to be successful. I need you, God. I need you, God, in my life. And in that place, you will be successful. Many, many years ago, some of you have heard this story before, I was somewhere in primary school, something happened in my life, and I used to be able to stand up and speak like I do today, but I couldn't, and I began to stammer quite badly. And all the way through my primary school days and my entire secondary school days, my A-levels and into my university, all the way through to Bible college, I stammered. Now, I did some public speaking, but it was horrible. I got stuck on words, and especially H's. H's are horrible, aren't they? Like heaven and hell and help and hello. They're just her. I mean, her's yuck, right? No, you don't get it. If you've ever stammered, you do. And it was hard. I felt called to the ministry, right? But I just hated speaking with a passion because I stammered. It was horrible. And when we're at Bible college and Michelle was sat probably just where she sat now, apart from I was in an old-fashioned pulpit. And it was my turn to preach, which I tried to get out of as much as possible because it was horrible. But it was my turn, and so I was there in the pulpit. And I had 20 minutes prepared, and about 15 minutes in, I got stuck. I mean, stuck on a word. And I'm pretty stubborn. Very stubborn, actually. Yes, thank you, Michelle. And but I felt like quitting. I felt like getting down, and I'm done. This ministry call, I'm done. And but I kind of staggered on, and it took me probably 10 or 15 minutes to finish. And eventually I got to the end and went down and sat down on the pew next to Michelle and just bawled my eyes out. I said, God, I'm finished. I can't do this. You cannot ask me to speak with this stammer. It's killing me. The congregation feels sorry for me, but that's not going to help your kingdom grow at all. They're just going to feel sorry for me. I said, I can't do this. But I'll give it one more go, God, just one more go. Just, and if you will heal me from this, then I'll rely on you for the rest of my life when I'm speaking. Because I'm scared otherwise. And I didn't hear a magic voice. There was no warm feeling or any fuzziness or anything at all. Just the prayer and the honesty in it. And I can't remember when it was, actually. A few weeks, a few months later, I don't know. I was down to preach again. So this was my last time, right? And got up, perfect, almost. And since that day, I still mess my words up, as most of you know, and get things. But the stammer's gone. God took it away in a flash. Why? Because I was scared. And guys, you should be scared sometimes. Scared of who he is and scared of what he asks you to do, because in that place God can come through. And you see, you almost need to be in that place from time to time, once you'll never experience the story of your life being transformed through the miraculous power of God. You see, because I stand up here and I'm reminded of it so often. I don't need to just kind of hesitate over a word, and I'm reminded of it immediately, of what God has done for me and how he's changed my life. But it took a bit of fear. There's nothing wrong with a bit of scaredness, a bit of fear. Perfect love drives out fear, but not the scaredness in life. There should be still some of that left. And if you're going to serve God, occasionally this year, you need to say, I need to be scared a bit. And that will help me go deeper in God and trust in him. Is that okay? But on the other side of that, there should be so much faith. There should be so much faith. So much faith. Faith that God is with you, Matthew 28, verse 20. That God is for you, Matthew 7. The story that if you ask and seek and knock, that God's a great father and he'll bless you. That God is profoundly interested in his name being honored as you serve him. He wants you to succeed so that his name is glorified. There's some references for that, but never mind. That God is profoundly interested in people being saved. When you're going, I'm going to try and help some people cross the line of faith so they understand who God is. God is going like, good on you, I'm in. Not maybe, he's definitely in. He's like, definitely in. One of my favorite verses is 2 Peter 3, 9. And it says that God will long that no one will be lost. He wants everybody to be in his kingdom. I love that verse. It's like, yes, he wants the whole world to be in heaven. Ah, that's good news. So he wants your friends and your work colleagues and your family that don't know Jesus yet to be in the kingdom. He wants that to happen. And he will walk with you. And you can have faith that he's going to help you do it. You need to have faith that God is really interested in people being healed and restored and made holy and perfect and right. It's why he died. 1 Peter 2 verse 24, it says, by his wounds, by his death, we're healed. Why? Because he wants to heal and restore. It's why he came, why he lived and why he died. God is profoundly interested in your success and you being blessed. And again, I have some references if you want to grab me afterwards. There's a story in Luke chapter 7 of a centurion, and I want to read it to you. The reason I want to read it to you is that Jesus says that this guy has the most faith that he's ever met. So perhaps worth reading, right? If we want to be a faithful people. So Luke 7, verse 1, reads this. When Jesus had finished saying all these things, he'd just been preaching. In the hearing of the people, he entered Capernaum. So he'd been outside Capernaum, and then he comes in, presumed through the city walls, into Capernaum itself. There, a centurion's servant, who his master valued highly, was sick and was about to die. He was seriously ill. Now, the centurion heard of Jesus, but sent, so rather than going himself, he sends some of the elders. He found the people he thought were the most influential to go to Jesus, the elders of the Jews, to ask him to come and heal his servant. So these elders came to Jesus on the centurion's behalf, as if it was a centurion, and said, Jesus, can you come and heal this centurion's servant? Because he's highly valued, and the centurion is somebody that we honor and respect. He honors and respects our religion. He's even rebuilt our synagogue for us. He's a good guy. He loves God in his way. Can he come and heal? And Jesus says, yes, of course I'll come. So Jesus went with him. But he was not far from the house when the centurion sent some other people, some of his friends to him. And his friends said this, Lord, don't trouble yourself on behalf of the centurion, right? It says, on behalf of the centurion. So the centurion says to his friends, Lord, don't trouble yourself, for I do not deserve to have you come under my roof. That is why I did not even consider myself worthy to come to you. But, he says, but just say the word. You don't need to be in the presence of the servant. Just say the word from afar. Say the word. Because I know my servant will be healed, for I myself am a man under authority with soldiers under me. I tell this one, go, and he goes. And this one, come, and he comes. Note he hadn't sent soldiers. He sent his friends. Did you notice the difference? So his friends had gone on his behalf because they wanted to, not because they'd been told. That's an important thing. Anyway, for I myself, with soldiers, I tell this one, go, and he goes. This one, come, and he comes. And I say to my servant, do this and does this. And when Jesus heard this, he was amazed at him and turning to the crowd following, him. He said, I tell you, I have not found such great faith even in Israel. Then the men who had been sent returned to the house and found the servant well. Jesus, you don't need to feel like Jesus is present with you. This is the key for you to do amazing miracles. Some of you are waiting. I just need to have enough faith and then I can do whatever it is, right? You know, when I feel like I have enough faith, I've had enough experience or I'm feeling the right mood, then I will tell my work colleague about Jesus. Then I'll do whatever it is that, you know, God's asking you to do. When Jesus is present. I mean, that's what he's saying. When I feel Jesus is present, when I'm feeling right. But the centurion didn't. Jesus, I know you're still far off, but that's okay. I know you can do it. And if you're going to serve Jesus well this year, you need to be full of faith that even if you feel like God is a long way from you, he can still do the miracle. He can still use you powerfully. Even because he is with you. He's promised, right? I talked about this last week. He is with you. He promised to be with you. His spirit, his gifting is all over you. So even if you feel like he's a long way away, you need to have faith. And Jesus commends the centurion because he realized that Jesus didn't physically need to be there. Just the word was enough. And if we can live like that, imagine if on the darkest day of your Christian life, you can pray for somebody and they get healed. What difference would that make, eh? Rather than waiting for the moment where you feel like, I feel fully fired up for Jesus today. Today's prayer day. Yesterday wasn't because I felt miserable. Today's prayer day because I feel good. What if every day was a faithful day? To serve God, his purpose, his vision, his kingdom and value. What if every day was a day when the power of God was to serve your family and friends and to love them and see miracles done here? What if every day was so full of a little bit of fear and lots of faith to serve your employee in supernatural ways? What if every day was like that? Yeah. Even when Jesus seemed afar off, wasn't yet in the house, wasn't yet in what you felt like your presence, what if in those days you say, God, I'll still have the faith to pray. I'll still have the faith to believe. Oh man, that'd be awesome, right? Yeah. That would be awesome. Because it would mean every day of your life, you would believe that God could do something amazing through you. Feelings will be out of the question. You say, I just know that God is able to do it, and I'm going to live in that place. And I want to encourage you, as you serve, be in church, or you serve your family, or you serve your boss, or you're serving your lecturer or your tutor, whatever it is, that you'd serve with a little bit of fear. God is great. We're serving him. We don't want to fail him. But also with a huge amount of faith that God is for us, and he will help us succeed in every area of our life as we follow.